And, you know, it's interesting. Again, I was recalling my conversation with John yesterday. You don't hear much about quality of life issues with venetoclax as opposed to ibrutinib and all the issues you run into there. Is there anything that you can detect other than, you know, this issue of tumor lysis from a quality of life or complication point of view?
You know, this is something that I feel like when I go over risks and benefits before starting, that I feel a little like I'm selling snake oil because I'm telling them these great outcomes. And then they say, well, what are the side effects? And I kind of shrug my shoulders. You know, I've treated 100 probably patients now with AML with venetoclax, whether on the clinical trials or off label. And I cannot put my finger on one sort of common theme with respect to side effects. Now, there's the tumor lysis at the beginning that you mentioned. You have to get through that. Some people have some very vague, mild GI stuff, but I suspect a lot of that, these pills are big and we ask them to take oftentimes four of them a day. And these are older patients who have difficulty swallowing. So we've run into some issues there that I think are just more related to swallowing these big pills. And of course, I've had one-off patients who have some things that I think are associated gout flares and in one case a rash, but no unifying theme. It's amazing. So yeah, with respect to other like kinase inhibitors that you mentioned, like ibrutinib, and I treat a lot of CML, so all the tyrosine kinase inhibitors, the fatigue and things, I am not seeing that. It's remarkable.
You know, it's interesting you mentioned the thing about the large pills is a really cool pragmatic point. But, you know, a lot of times when we ask, we had a group of general oncologists in here a couple of weeks ago, they haven't even used venetoclax, you know, at all. Or maybe they used it once. You know, sure. It's really not out there.
Yeah, the labeled indication for venetoclax is very narrow. So I can imagine not having prescribed it ever.
Well, I think it's going to change a lot in terms of CLL because it looks like it's going to be second-line therapy for CLL after ibrutinib with rituximab. And
yep.
So that certainly is going to change things. And it sounds like this thing's about ready to change things. You know, it's tempting to keep going, but let me just ask you one more question. I'll try to whip through a bunch of other things with AML and then maybe some ALL, which is in your experience or in the world's experience or whatever, what's the longest response duration you've seen so far?
Well, I've got several patients who are 3 years in now, and that's as long as the study's been going. So yeah, I have patients who in the very early days of this were treated and have not relapsed. So I'm trying to think, I just saw someone who just passed a 3-year mark.
So we were talking about untreated AML, thinking maybe, you know, when you talk about 3 years or whatever, even as a possibility, let alone probability, hopefully people are going to start getting treated or
yes.
Treated more.